Hello, I'm Robert Ostege. This is number 0179, the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0179. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, actress Marissa Ramirez is back on the show, one of the stars of the Lifetime movie Prosecuting Casey Anthony. She plays the wife of Rob Lowe's character, who plays the prosecutor of the case. And having been on this film, has it affected her opinion of the actual case of Casey Anthony?
My feelings became a lot stronger in that I was frustrated that she was acquitted. And she became the she was called the most hated woman in America. And there was just so much controversy over the whole case. And so being a part of the movie based on the trial was pretty interesting. It was pretty big for me because it was something real that happened. And it was a big part of what was going on all over the state.
Anna Marie Pluhar is the author of Sharing Housing, a guide for finding and keeping housemates. What made her write the book?
I made the decision to write the book when a friend of mine was complaining about her finances, and I said, you know, you should rent a room in your house. And she said, oh gosh, I don't know how to do that. And I said, well, I do. And we talked it through, and I agreed that I would coach her through a process. And after I got off the phone, I realized that I had, in fact, developed a process that I could teach other people.
Veteran TV producer Joe Senna talks about the dearth of reality shows on the air.
Sometimes I wonder, does Hollywood not have anything else to produce anymore? Like, have we all exhausted all shows for, like, sitcoms and family-oriented TV? Like, we just have to do reality? It's like the one line from Bowling for Soup's song, 1985. The song where it was, you know, when did reality become TV?
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0179, is Robert Ostege, who is the senior producer of Global Montreal Morning News, a new show which debuts on Global Montreal on Monday, January 28th. The show will air Monday through Friday from 6 to 9 a.m. That's why it's called a morning show. It is hosted by Richard Dagenet and Camille Ross, so check it out when you get a chance. That's starting Monday, January 28th on Global Montreal. And thank you very much, Robert, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, this is interesting story. A Washington woman is accused of smothering her boyfriend to death with her breasts. Snohomish County authorities was called out to the couple's Airport Inn trailer park. Yeah. After witnesses heard the 51-year-old man yelling at her to get off of him after she had thrown him down. Now, the authorities, when they arrived, they found the man dead with Donna Lang on top of him, her chest smothering his face. She smothered him to death, a witness told deputies. Now, was that witness just watching? I'm wondering. Authorities found hair in the victim's hand, believed to be that of Donna's, and noticed fresh bruises on the man's hands and face. Donna, who is 5'6" and weighs 192 pounds, also had an injury to her face. The victim, it was listed as 5'7" and 175 pounds. Lang, who appeared to be drunk, they're always drunk, told authorities she did not know how her boyfriend died. Lang has been charged with second-degree manslaughter. Okay, admit it, guys. Just for a brief moment, while I was reading that, you were saying to yourself, that's the way I want to go. Well, you know, don't be hard on yourself. I mean, the only problem with thinking that way is if you're still thinking that way. I mean, at one point, reality has to set in, right? Yeah. A man confronted a woman getting out of her car at a shopping center in Oceanside, California. He showed a weapon and told her to get back into her car, which she did, and drove away, leaving the man behind. The carjacker then went to another car where a woman was getting out, showed her a weapon, and told her to get back inside her car. Instead, she ran into a store and called police. The robber then went to a third woman and demonstrated that he could indeed learn from previous experiences. He told her to get out of her car. She did, but hit a kill switch that not only locked out the ignition, but trapped the man inside. He smashed a window to get out and escape before police could arrive. He remains outstanding, the report says. Yeah, well, he's not just outstanding, he's downright stupendous. He could have easily, by the way, been this week's idiot of the day, but he's not. After all, he did get away, but I suspect we'll hear of his stupidity in the future again, so please stay tuned. Julie Arnold, age 49, was released on $17,000 bail after her fourth arrest for driving under the influence of alcohol. Her license has been revoked for the past 8 years, so she was cited for that, too. When Arnold was pulled over by a St. Lucie County, Florida sheriff's deputy, she parked on the sidewalk. The deputy found an open bottle of alcohol on the seat, another bottle in a bag, as well as pills and marijuana. It was the final straw for her employer, and she has resigned from her job. Okay, want to know what her job is? Can't wait, can you? Yeah. Arnold was the clinical director of a woman's drug and alcohol treatment center in Fort Pierce. Can you believe that? Oh, the irony. Surely she can quickly find another job because it's clear she has a lot of experience in the field. Police in Florida arrested a YouTube prankster accused of giving wedgies to strangers at a movie theater. Manatee County Sheriff's Dean of Bradenton and a friend went to the Royal Palm Theater and Ross began giving wedgies to strangers while his friend took video footage. Deputies said most of the alleged victims were too embarrassed to press charges, but one said charges would be filed. Investigators said Ross is known by local law enforcement for pranks he pulls for his YouTube videos. Ross and his friend were ejected from the theater and told they would be arrested if they ever returned. The camera was seized as evidence. Yes. If jailed, who's going to videotape Charles Ross getting a wedgie or worse from cellmates? Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, that would be the Stuff File program, a man fitting the description of a missing mental patient. Don't you just hate when something starts with that sentence? Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, a man fitting the description of a missing mental patient was apprehended by police and brought to a Perth, Australia psychiatric hospital. The staff identified him as the escapee, perhaps because he denied he needed their care. They gave him antipsychotic drugs, drugs that caused such a powerful reaction, he ended up in a regular hospital overnight. But the man had been mistakenly identified, and authorities began an investigation. So he wasn't the missing mental patient. Oh joy, oh bliss. It's simple. The hospital employees were delusional and persisted in their delusion when told the truth. Maybe we should drug them. I mean, they fit the profile, don't they? Yeah. Anyway, to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, actress Marissa Ramirez is back on the show once again. We last talked to Marissa when she starred in Spartacus, Gods of the Arena, the six-part prequel to Blood and Sand. Well, she joins us now to talk about her latest project, which is a TV movie that, as they say, is ripped from the headlines. She stars with Rob Lowe in Prosecuting Casey Anthony. Marissa's on the line with us right now from Los Angeles. Hi, Marissa.
Hi. Thanks for having me. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine. You're in your car right now.
Of course. It's L.A. That's what we do. Always in the car. This is pretty much my office, my second home, my closet. It's pretty bad.
Now, you were actually up here in Canada for a while shooting this movie, I understand. But
Yeah, we were in Winnipeg, actually.
Right.
Never been. It was nice.
Excellent. Now, we've talked before about some of the other work you've done in the past, but this one is a little different. First of all, you're playing a real person. You're playing the wife of the character that Rob Lowe plays, who is the prosecuting attorney in this film.
Right.
You're playing
a real-life woman, I know. And I never got the chance to meet her. So all that I could do was pretty much put my heart into the project and hope that she was happy with how I portrayed her, you know?
How come you didn't get a chance to meet her? Did you want to, or is it something you wanted to step back from?
Of course, definitely. They weren't in Winnipeg when we were filming, and you know, I wasn't up there for the whole time while they were shooting. I was just up there to do my scenes, and then I came right back. So, you know, they weren't there, and there hasn't been an opportunity. So I haven't met her, but I hope she's happy.
Now, in the case of this particular film, as I said, it's ripped from the headlines. It's something that actually took place and not that long ago. And this is a case that just about everyone had an opinion on. So how did you feel going into doing this movie?
Well, for most of the trial and when she finally reported her daughter missing, I was out of the country. I think I was in Colombia, and then I was in New Zealand, and I was in Canada working. So I wasn't able to follow the trial and what was happening in the media and everything. But I was, you know, completely aware of what was happening. And going into the movie, I started to do more and more research, and you know, I wanted to know pretty much everything that I could about the trial and what happened. And my feelings became a lot stronger in that I was frustrated that, you know, she was acquitted, and she became she was called the most hated woman in America, and there was just so much controversy over the whole case. And so being a part of the movie, you know, based on the trial, it was pretty interesting. It was pretty big for me because it was something real that happened, and it was a big part of what was going on all over the state. So, yeah.
I mentioned some possibility for intimidating factors. One, you're playing a real person, which can be intimidating. Two, you're acting opposite Rob Lowe, who not only is your co-star, but he's the executive producer, so he's also your boss.
Yeah. Although we had a good time. I never really thought about it like that. It was just kind of like, hi, I'm playing your wife. Let's do this. Let's go, you know? He made some little tweaks and adjustments to the scene, but making everything cuter and more sort of real and having more of a chemistry. And we just had a good time. It was fun. I was never really intimidated by him. I had met him once before and worked with him once before, so maybe that was part of it too. But yeah, it was really warm and welcoming.
Yeah, I believe you'd worked on his short-lived CBS series Dr. Vegas a few years back.
I did, yeah. Yeah, that was fun. I played a pop singer who was a drug addict and found out that she was pregnant, and he was my doctor.
Now, did any of your thoughts, and again, I know you were on the set for a short period of time, but in immersing yourself into this role, did any of your thoughts about the Casey Anthony case change one way, shape, or form?
Like I said, they just became stronger in, you know, with my gut and my woman's intuition of what I feel like really happened, maybe, or how the case should have been called. And, you know, it just became stronger. And, you know, like I said, just more frustrated with the outcome. And, of course, there's nothing I can do about it. There's nothing that any of us can do about it. And we may never know what happened to that poor, innocent little child, which is really unfortunate.
How do you go about picking your roles or going after the roles you get? And the reason why I ask that question is, in addition to doing this movie, prosecuting Casey Anthony, you're about to show up in one of my favorite television shows, which is Body of Proof on ABC.
Oh, I'm glad it's one of your favorite shows. Yeah, I just finished working on that last week, and I play a uniformed officer, a cop, who comes in investigating a crime scene, a murder investigation, and ends up sticking around after sort of catching the eye of one of the other detectives on the show. So Yeah, I wish I could say that I like to choose my roles carefully and stuff, but you know what, to be honest, I just love to keep going and keep working, and I like to throw as many things up against the wall and see what sticks, and that's what I'm going to do. That's the job I'm going to take. I just like to keep working, you know, and I don't like to turn down jobs. I love to keep going, you know.
Well, one of the things,
as long as something isn't degrading to myself or my family or anything, like, I'm going to take it. I'm going to do it. Everything is a challenge.
Well,
one
of the things that's interesting about the roles you've had is that there certainly is a diverse spectrum in the type of roles that you've done.
I guess so. I always think like they could be more diverse. There could be, you know, more period pieces and just really out there characters, such as maybe someone who's bipolar or an alcoholic or just, you know, someone who has a real struggle. That's something that I really haven't been able to sink my teeth into. So hopefully someday I'll be able to do something like that.
Well, if
but I guess everything's been sort of different, which is good.
If you had the opportunity to literally write your own ticket, what for you would be the perfect Marissa Ramirez role?
Wow, that's a tough one. That's a tough question. You know, I would love to do a period piece like in the 40s, something about maybe burlesque dancers. Not Betty Page, but my grandmother was a burlesque dancer back in the 40s and early 50s, I believe. And you know, she has some amazing stories about going to these bars in the middle of the night, driving home alone, having Thanksgiving by herself on the curb, eating a hot dog, always carried a gun in her glove box. You know, just, I don't know, just, I love that period. And if I could play something like that, something in that time period where I feel like the women were so classy, you know? Nobody was wearing jeans yet. It was just so classy. They weren't Uggs. Just little things like that.
Well, was it the period because of your grandmother's relationship to it, or was it the period because there were really some strong female actresses that were big in that time that dominated that time period in film?
Definitely, yes. And like I said again, too, they dominated in a way that was just so beautiful and classy, and maybe it's just how everything was written, but you know, it wasn't about showing off your, you know, assets up top or down below. It was just about the performances and being real, and really, you know, these women really dove into their characters and created something, and it was less about a look like it is nowadays. So I think that's maybe why I'm so attached to that period, too.
Which kind of brings us full circle, because the Casey Anthony movie that you're in is on Lifetime, which is a network that is known for showing, even though it shows a lot of women in peril films, there's a lot of substance to the roles that women seem to have, at least in Lifetime movies.
Yes. And what I love is most, you know, a lot of their movies are based on true events and true stories. And so that always makes it so much more interesting to watch, is you're watching a woman showing the real struggle of a real person. And it's not just a made up story a lot of the time, which, you know, the movies are great on Lifetime.
Getting back to A Body of Proof for a moment, not only are you on that series as a guest, but is it true that you're recurring in that show? So we'll see more of you as the third season of Body of Proof progresses?
Yeah, I'll be on there for, I think, about 4 episodes. So towards the end of the series, I come on. So yeah, I'm recurring.
Excellent. So glad to see that you're keeping busy and being diverse as well.
Yeah, wearing a uniform is fine too. That'll be interesting.
Do you have to go through any special training with police officers to play a role of a uniform cop?
You know what I loved about that is that my partner for the first episode, he was actually a real SWAT guy. You know, he actually had experience as a police officer and then joined the SWAT team. And, you know, so whatever I needed, whatever I had a question about, I just looked right next to me and he helped me out and gave me pointers, and you know, it was really refreshing to work with a real SWAT officer rather than, you know, an extra. I owe a lot to him for helping me out and making it look real.
And basically they told me, well, if acting doesn't work out, I think you can join the SWAT team or be a real police officer because you're doing pretty good with the gun, which that made me feel good. But it was probably all because of him. He helped me out a lot, and it was a lot of fun.
Well, that offer that they made, I'm sure it's never going to happen because for you acting is... For you, acting really is working out. People can see you in prosecuting Casey Anthony, which is on Lifetime, and also coming up in February and Body of Proof. Marissa, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us once again.
Thank you for having me. It's good to talk to you again.
Actress Marissa Ramirez, one of the stars of Prosecuting Casey Anthony. It airs on the Lifetime Network, and you can check your local listings. You'll also see her on ABC's third season of Body of Proof, which starts airing in February.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to The Stuff File, now with 25% fewer calories. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about house sharing. Plus, we'll also discuss the dearth of reality TV shows that are on the air. Plus, of course, there's an idiot of the day. But right now, more Stuff File news here on The Stuff File program. Also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. David Zettner, age 56, and his wife flew home in their private plane to LaBelle, Florida, from their second home in Franklin, North Carolina. The flight path and the landing procedure here in LaBelle flies right over our property anyway, Zettner said. So we always make a circle over our property. As they did that, my wife says, "Honey, there's somebody at our house." We see this guy walking around our house, looking in windows, checking the doors, scoping the house out. The man didn't pay any attention to the circling plane, though. At one point, he even stood with his hands on his hips and looked up at us. They watched as the man hooked their trailer to his car and drove off. They followed the car from above for several miles, then landed to call 911. They directed police to where Gary Haynes, age 59, had parked and charged him with grand theft auto. At no point did he act like he made any correlation, Zettner said, like, "Wait a minute, this guy is following me." Yeah, well, you know, oblivious obliviates are the best kind, aren't they? Elsewhere, sometimes police work is serious business, but other times citizens need to just step away from the phone. As the BCRCMP point out in an article detailing some of the odd calls they've received. For instance, writes Corporal Jamie Chung, a man called police after the hamster he'd brought home from the pet store gave birth to a litter of 10 babies and became aggressive protecting her brood. When the store wouldn't give him a refund, he wanted to drop the critters off to the cops. The call taker explained why police were unable to get involved in consumer disputes and talked him out of it with no harm coming to the hamsters, Chung points out. Then there was the time someone called to report traffic chaos at an intersection. The offender had muddled brown feathers, red comb, yellow beak, shiny chicken legs. The man notified police after he asked the creature why it crossed the road and got no response. Another man thought the cops could get a pizza joint to replace the substandard pie they delivered. Our call taker patiently explained the difference between criminal and civil complaints and that there aren't enough police officers in the city to enforce good food. Chung writes, of course, cops don't want people to hesitate to call when they are in real distress, but a Sasquatch sighting probably doesn't qualify. That's his actual quote. Okay, a couple of stories under the headlines of challenging business plans. Number one, British medical illustrator Emily Evans recently created 8 pricey bone china dinner plates emblazoned with a microscope image of tissue slides of the human liver, thyroid, esophagus, and testicles. $60 per plate, $200 for a set of 4. Yes. And number 2, in October, a shop in London's St. Bart's Pathology Museum ran a special sale of cupcakes as part of a sexually transmitted disease awareness campaign. Each pastry's icing was crafted to resemble the lesions, boils, and warts of gonorrhea and other maladies. Now, okay, as twisted as both of these items sound on the surface, I'm not going to knock them. And you know why? Because I wear a necktie from a company called Infectious Awearables that features patterns that are actually various diseases and infections under a microscope. So it would be somewhat hypocritical of me to rail against this story. Although I must say, I'm guessing that the two items I mentioned are a lot less marketable than the tie that I just mentioned. By the way, Infectious Awearables also has other items like scarves and boxer shorts with the same patterns. You can check them out on their website. The link you'll find here on my website on this week's Stuff File page. And, you know, maybe I'll have the folks from Infectious Awearables on the show sometime. Let me look into that. Anyway, moving right along, artist Maria Fernandez Cardozo, already known for her circus of performing fleas at Australia's Sydney Festival 10 years ago, has since become a legitimate academic expert on the sex organs of fleas and other insects. Well, I guess someone has to do it. She debuted the Museum of Copulatory Organs last year near Sydney, teaching visitors such esoterica as, in many insect species, females are promiscuous. Snails are hermaphrodites, in which one shoots sperm darts that form rigid chastity belt-like blockages on his mate, and a male flea copulates for 8 hours straight, but only mates 3 times in his life. Now, this is the stuff that never comes up in Trivial Pursuit. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, researchers writing in the December issue of the journal Urology, yeah, we read them all for this show, folks, reported a 5-fold increase over 10 years in emergency room visits for accidents caused by pubic hair grooming. Unsurprisingly, 83% of all injuries appeared to be shaving accidents, but only 56% of the patients were women, according to a summary of the research on medicalexpress.com. Yes, this apparently is yet another first world crisis in the making. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Have you ever thought of sharing your house with roommates to soften an economic burden? Anna Marie Pluhar is the author of Sharing Housing, A Guide for Finding and Keeping Housemates. She has lived in house-sharing situations for over 20 years, and she joins us right now via Skype-to-Skype communications from Vermont. Hi, Anna Marie.
Hi there, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us. First off, I want to know, you live in Vermont, as I've mentioned, and I'm just wondering if the situation is different when it comes to smaller communities versus bigger cities, for instance?
I don't know that it's that much different. I think that what is true is that in big cities, there are more choices about possible housemates. In small communities, there may not be a person who fits right away.
See, I'm almost thinking that it's the opposite. And the reason why I say that is, you know, sometimes larger communities can be a bit more impersonal. You tend to find in smaller communities a more neighborly-like situation, a more friendly situation when it comes to dealing with potential strangers, for instance.
Yeah, well, my book is about how to find and keep a good housemate, and the find is really important. There's a process that I outline, and it's a step-by-step process from the first idea, maybe I should have a housemate, to actually having somebody move in. And I call housemates former strangers, because the process that I'm recommending is one that allows you to go from, okay, this person's a stranger, to knowing enough about them before they move in that they don't feel like a stranger when they move in.
Now, when did you, I said you've been doing this for 20 years. What made you first do this? Was it your house that somebody's moving into, or did you move into somebody else's house?
I moved to Boston and I was post-college, and obviously you share housing because it's so much cheaper. And I lived in a group house actually after graduate school that I just happened to love the apartment. It was a good location, and yeah, I just loved the apartment. And I ended up staying there 8 years with various different housemates who came and went. In fact, the first year I coaxed two friends who were living independently to join with me in looking for a house. They didn't end up liking each other very much, and so they both moved out, but I stayed on. Later on in my life, I bought a big house outside Washington, D.C., in the metro area, and I bought it on purpose so that I would have housemates, and that was great.
Well, let's go through some of the things you mentioned that you say in your book. You have this checklist in picking roommates or housemates, I should say. I would assume, after doing this for 20 years, that you've learned some of these things the hard way. So what's the biggest mistake that you've done, and I've obviously since corrected, in finding housemates?
Not checking references. That was the biggest mistake, and it caused me to live with, for a short period of time, with somebody I found out later was a serious con artist. He bilked me out of about $500, which at the time was a fortune for me. And I was, like many people do, sort of, okay, I trust my gut. I'm a pretty good judge of character and that sort of thing. But this fellow was a legitimate con artist. I talked to his sister after he left, and I was lucky because he'd taken lots more money from other people. So I say that everybody should always, always ask for references, and it goes both ways. Not just if you've got a place and you're thinking about having somebody move in, but if you're thinking about moving in, it's fair to ask the person you're going to be living with whether you can talk to somebody who's already lived with them.
Now, you have alluded to the fact that you not only have had one housemate at a time, you've often had multiple, correct?
Correct.
So what makes your situation, what makes a housemate different than a tenant? And what makes you different than a landlord?
That's a fair question. I think the difference is that you're actually sharing a roof, and you're sharing usually a kitchen, and sometimes you're sharing a bathroom. So you're living closer than in a landlord-tenant relationship. And you get to know each other. I think that one of the benefits for many of the people adults who are single is to have that casual social interaction that you don't get if you're a single person, at least for most people. Most people, in order to see other people, you have to be pretty proactive socially. And that can be tiring. But to have somebody at home to whom you can say good morning or how was your day, or have somebody ask you how your day was, and you have this nice casual friendship, I would say, that really can alleviate a kind of stark loneliness that some people experience.
Do you have more than one housemate now?
I have one two-legged housemate and two four-legged housemates. I think that if I had known when I bought the house I'm living in that I was going to act on this idea that I had of writing the book, I would have bought a house that guaranteed I had housemates. I like having housemates.
Well, at what point did you decide, after the 20 years of doing this, that you needed to write this book?
I made the decision to write the book when a friend of mine was complaining about her finances, and I said, you know, you should rent a room in your house. And she said, oh gosh, I don't know how to do that. And I said, well, I do. And we talked it through, and I agreed that I would coach her through a process. And after I got off the phone, I realized that I had in fact developed a process that I could teach other people. I will admit that from that moment of insight and writing an outline to actually doing the project was 5 years.
A couple of things. I mean, interpersonal relationships on both extremes of the situation. I mean, you could do a background check into somebody and then they move in and you just find out that you're not compatible as housemates. The other side of that coin is it might lead to something of a more romantic nature. Is that something that is open to the situation or is it something not looked at? Sorry?
I don't recommend it. So here, when one of the very, very first step of anybody thinking about having a housemate is stopping and thinking about what you personally must have and what you can't live with in a housemate, the deal breakers. And although there are sort of obvious ones that everybody would think about around allergies or vegetarian food, drugs, alcohol, that sort of stuff, I think that we are all so individual that we may have particular things. So, and you know, maybe you love to listen to opera at breakfast. Well, you better find a housemate for whom that is okay, and not fingernails on a chalkboard. So by the time somebody has moved in, you should have sussed out that the basic areas in which you have to interact around routines, the kitchen use, tasks, bills, guests, noise, by which I mean television, radio, music, all of those things, you are in agreement about how you're going to manage them before you move in. That pretty much, it won't guarantee you get along famously, but it will make sure that you don't have something that is really won't work for you.
Now, you use the term again, housemates, and I already asked the difference between a housemate and a tenant, which you've explained, but I'm just wondering, for legal purposes, for tax purposes, does the government look at your situation as having a housemate, or do they look at you as having a rental property with a tenant?
It depends on where you live, what your local laws are, and in the United States, it's income to you. You need to declare the income, and also you can deduct the costs of making that income. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
So that's the way I would love to see our tax code shift so that people who are in fact renting rooms in their home, that while they are resident, that would be income would be tax free. I think that would make a huge difference for a lot of people.
The book is called Sharing Housing, A Guide for Finding and Keeping Housemates. I understand people can go to your website, which is sharinghousing.com. What will they find there?
On the website, not only would they find how to buy the book, but also I have a free PDF. It's called 5 Questions You Must Ask to Guarantee You Won't Be Living with a Psycho. I'd love to have people read that. There's a questionnaire that they can fill out to use when interviewing other people. There are worksheets that you can download, and lots of articles about how to do this, and people who are sharing housing and what their lives are like.
Excellent. Anna Marie, I thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Anna Marie Pluhar, author of Sharing Housing, A Guide for Finding and Keeping Housemates. You can check out her website at sharinghousing.com. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0179, and you'll find links to her site. You'll also find links to amazon.com and amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. At the 1939 World's Fair, asbestos was hailed as the magic mineral. Since it could be combined with other materials to protect people from being burned to death, it became very popular. Unfortunately, scientists later discovered that asbestos itself was a killer. The wonder mineral had actually caused the deaths of thousands. In the years since the true dangers of asbestos became known, hundreds of thousands of lawsuits have been filed against companies that made or used it. At one point, it was estimated that the cost of all these lawsuits was $70 billion. Sadly, less than half of that went to the victims. The majority actually went to the lawyers. Let's be fair. When the lawyers are making more money from lawsuits than the victims, the courts are not only failing those who have been harmed, they're encouraging fraud. In Pittsburgh recently, two asbestos lawyers were ordered to pay nearly $500,000 to a company they sued using phony evidence. Find out more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio that puts a smile on your face and a skip in your step. Please avoid skipping if you are driving.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about reality TV. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day. But right now, I've got one more Stuff File news to share with you. On the Stuff File program, William Cook Jr., age 27, was arrested after a manager at a Wendy's restaurant in Rome, Georgia, complained that Cook was acting strange and disturbing customers, and when police asked for his ID, he provided bogus information. In a search, officers found a note in his pocket reading, "How Bill Cook intends to rob a Wendy's restaurant on Martha Berry and get away with it," followed by lists labeled Plan A and Plan B. Well, first of all, I'm always concerned about people who write notes about themselves in the third person. But I guess it's always good to have plans, I guess. Not so good to be absent-minded. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. It seems as though television has been taken over by reality. MTV no longer plays music, and the History Channel seems to be lacking in, well, history. Reality TV shows have taken over what seems to be every channel, yet people remain hooked. But why is that? On the line with us right now is Joe Senna. He's a veteran television producer and an expert on media trends. He joins us from Florida. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Peter. How are you doing today?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Thanks a lot.
Why is it that reality television show seems to be taking over? I would assume part of it has to do with it's cheaper than to produce than scripted programs.
Yeah, that's the thing. And plus, as you can see, all the channels almost basically got reality shows on there, like... You know, like we mentioned, MTV is basically not even music television anymore. History Channel has their reality shows. Even a couple others, like True TV, they show some reality shows on there. Annie's got Storage Wars, Parking Wars. Those are kind of like reality shows as well. Let's see what else we got. NBC's got, you know, Donald Trump with his Apprentice show, and then you got the Dancing with the Stars. I mean, that's somewhat of a reality show.
What I find interesting is I distinctly remember back when reality shows started to take over television, NBC was the last one to the party. And NBC at the time said, and I quote, "We are never going to be doing reality shows." And then they dived right in with The Biggest Loser. It's like, what happened?
You know, it was like peer pressure. You know, like when you tell kids don't smoke, don't drink, and then they wound up doing it, they basically said the same thing. It's like, well, we're not going to do it. And they basically got pressured probably so hard by, like, the top execs and everything, and they just said, okay, fine, we're going to give in and do it.
Is there reality in reality shows?
I don't think there is. I think a lot of it is basically put on. I think it's all fake. Rarely do you see anything that is real. To give you one example, I remember seeing in the news, it was when Storage Wars was on A&E. One of the guys that was on there basically came out and said, oh, the whole thing is fake.
And yet, and I know he's involved in a lawsuit with Storage Wars after he was fired from the show, yet A&E also has Storage Wars Texas, and they're about to premiere Storage Wars New York. So the idea that someone comes out and says it's fake doesn't seem to tarnish the brand.
Yeah, that's true. It's funny, too. I mean, like you were saying, with all these other ones that are coming out, and even some of the other ones that I've seen are coming out, too. Like, A&E had Gene Simmons, The Family Jewels. That's almost like a reality show. When also they had the... with the Gotti family, that was another one. So yeah, there's just so many out there. So sometimes I wonder, that does Hollywood not have anything else to produce anymore? Like, have we all exhausted all shows for like sitcoms and family-oriented TV? Like, we just have to do reality? It's like the one line from that I remember from Bowling for Soup's song, 1985. The song where it was, when did reality become TV?
Well, why is it, do you think, that so many people get sucked into reality TV? As viewers.
It's like peer pressure. One person sees it, you start hearing about it, and then people are like, I don't really want to check it out. And then, more people keep talking. I was like, well, it looks like I might have to check it out. And then you hear something on the news saying, oh, there's going to be this big thing that's going to happen on this reality show tonight, and you're going to want to check it out. And next thing you know, if you forget to check it out, everybody's talking about it the next day, and you're trying to run around like on YouTube to see if it's up, to see like, oh, what are they talking about? I got to check it out. And that's how basically everybody starts getting hooked. The next thing you know, everybody's watching it, and then it starts becoming a regular thing for everyone.
Okay, so do you watch reality television?
Rarely. The only thing that shows I've ever watched, and I'll admit to this, is I watched one season of Dancing with the Stars. It was because Clooney's now girlfriend, Stacey Keibler, who was working with the WWE at the time, was on there, and everybody was pushing it on their show, and I wanted to see how she would do as a dancer. I saw that. I have watched Parking Wars because my dad got me hooked on that when he was watching it. It was always kind of kind of funny. And that's basically the only reality show that I see.
What I'm concerned about is the slippery slope, because as we alluded to initially, there's not a lot of reality in the reality shows. However, people come to these things seeing the opportunity to seek fame and fortune, because they've seen how reality shows have played out in the past. Doesn't that just, I was going to say raise the bar, but maybe lower the bar, because as previous reality shows become popular, the onus is on producers and on people out there finding more outrageous, supposedly real folks to put on TV.
Yeah, they do. It's like finding anybody who's going to be the next, Johnny Come Lately, that's going to be big and famous. Who's going to be the next Snooki? Who's going to be the next Bachelor? Who's going to be the next Bachelorette?
Who's going to be the next Honey Boo Boo?
Yeah. Yeah, there's one.
The popularity of reality shows from the point of view of network television and by extension, cable, was it just almost a necessity of economics at the time when it first... I mean, did they hit upon doing reality shows because it was cheap, and then all of a sudden they realized, hey, we're onto something here?
Yeah, definitely they did. It was like an experimental thing. It's like, well, let's try this and let's see what happens. And, if it goes over, great. If it doesn't, we'll move on to something else. And when they saw it, it take up and people started watching it and started getting popular, then you started seeing all the different ones starting to sprout up, and it's still going as of today.
In the introduction, I mentioned that you're a veteran television production manager. What type of shows did you work on?
I worked behind the scenes in news. It was just a regular local news that we did, on prime time, weekends, late night, things like that. That was basically my thing. I basically oversaw all the crew, make sure we had enough people there. If we didn't, call people in that we would need, make sure we had extra people there for severe circumstances, like a hurricane hitting or 9/11. When 9/11 happened, we had to be all hands on deck for that.
Well, that brings up another point. I'm also in television news, and one of the things that is somewhat annoying to the folks in television news is when the popularity of reality shows creeps into becoming news stories. I mean, nowadays you see news stories that mention Honey Boo Boo or the Kardashians. Do you find that problematic, the fact that reality is becoming, sad to say, a news item in some cases?
Yeah, it is. Unfortunately, it's like, whenever I hear that, it's like, in my opinion, it's like, I don't care about the Kardashians. I don't care about Honey Boo Boo. You know, if they're having a good time or they're having problems, that's fine. Let them deal with it on their own. We don't need to air out everybody's dirty laundry all over the place and let the entire world know about it.
I once saw just recently they were doing some streeters on a television news program, and they were asking the question, they were asking people what they thought about certain reality show celebrities, from Honey Boo Boo to the Kardashians, and they interviewed these people, and then they asked the same people, who's your representative in Congress, and they had no idea.
Yeah, that's like the man on the street thing with Jay Leno. It's like, you know, hold up the picture, you can see who it is, and it's like, who is it? You know, most people would know, other people wouldn't. I remember one time my dad told me that whenever he turned on the TV and was channel surfing, he'd always come across, like, when Howard Stern had his show on certain channels, he'd have, like, certain people on there. The thing he always told me was he used to always have the Playboy bunnies that are on there. He'd always ask these, like, very, very simple questions, you know, like, who's, you know, what president's on the dollar bill? Who's the current president of the United States? You know, what's the capital of, you know, Florida? And none of them could never answer.
Wow.
But the thing is, he would mention, and then he would mention some, like, off-the-wall, I think, question, and I don't remember, like, why. I think it was more like, let's see if I can remember one off the sample off the top of my head here. So back so many years here. and I think one was something about, well, who was it? Oh, I think it was just around the time they were starting up the whole reality shows. And I think it was going to be I think it was the first season of Dancing with the Stars. And I don't remember who was on the first season myself. And they said, you know, what was the first, name one person from Dancing with the Stars, they named it. All three of them named who was on there, but they couldn't name none of the others.
Mm. Do you think reality television is something that is going to be with us for a long time, or is this just a phase?
It's probably going to be with us for some time, and then once they start seeing the popularity wane out, it'll start to fade out slowly but surely. But it won't be like a rapid succession. It won't be like, you know, we turn on the TV tomorrow, okay, all reality shows are done. No, just after so many years, they'll start to taper off. And once they start seeing ratings dropping on them, then that's when they'll be like, all right, well, that's it. We just need to, you know, put the final nail in the coffin and say, you know, this season will be it, or this episode's it, or, you know, we'll just let it run its course and let it fade away and it's in the darkness.
Joseph, I thank you very, very much for taking the time for being on the program with us. People can find out more information about what you do by going to your website, which is ariusdj.com, and that's AIRIUSDJ.com, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Joe Senna, a veteran TV producer. You can visit his website to find out more info, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0179, and you'll find that link. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
And many thanks to Bob Welsh of WDEV for finding this week's idiot. Here is another reason not to wear flip-flops. A 31-year-old woman who left behind her sandal during a burglary at a donut shop in Waterville, Maine, is going to jail. Jessica Savage of Winslow was sentenced in Kennebec County Superior Court to serve 9 months of a 5-year prison term after pleading guilty to breaking into a Dunkin' Donuts and stealing $150. Prosecutors say last April, Savage smashed a window, jumped over a counter, and passed a cash box out of the window, but she lost one of her flip-flops in her getaway, and prosecutors say DNA from the sandal linked her to the crime. That almost has a Cinderella CSI feel to it, doesn't it? The burglary was also captured on the store's security cameras. Savage was already in jail for breaking into State Representative Thomas Longstaff's home and stealing a laptop computer a week after the donut shop burglary. Longstaff's wife, Cindy, called 911 and chased Savage down and retrieved the laptop. Waterville police nabbed Savage a short time later. Investigators said the woman had left behind a sweatshirt and a backpack in that break-in. Now, why would someone continue to commit crimes but leave a trail of personal stuff at the crime scene? Well, one reason and one reason only. She's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0179. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0179. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Hope you enjoyed it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. A tape of the preceding program will be sent to the Radio Hall of Fame, where it will be placed under the statue of Marconi, which is kind of wobbly.